Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 33, Activities of Kapila, Texts 1 and 2. I'll just read the first text. Maitreya uvacha evam nishamya kapilasya vacho janitri sakardamasya daita kila deva hutihi Vishrasta moha patala tam abhipranamya tushtava tattva vishayankita siddhi bhumim. Translation. Sri Maitreya said, thus Devahuti, the mother of Lord Kapila and wife of Kardama Muni, became freed from all ignorance concerning devotional service and transcendental knowledge. She offered her obeisances unto the Lord, the author of the basic principles of the Sankhya system of philosophy, which is the background of liberation. And she satisfied him with the following verses of prayer. Purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The system of philosophy enunciated by Lord Kapila before his mother is the background for situation on the spiritual platform. The specific significance of this system of philosophy is stated herein as Siddhi Bhumim. It is the background of salvation. People who are suffering in this material world because they are conditioned by the material energy can easily get freedom from the clutches of matter by understanding the Samkhya philosophy enunciated by Lord Kapila. By this system of philosophy, one can immediately become free even though one is situated in this material world. That stage is called Jivan Mukta, Mukti. This means that one is liberated even though one stays with his material body. That happened for Devahuti, the mother of Lord Kapila. And she therefore satisfied the Lord by offering her prayers. Anyone who understands the basic principle of Sankhya philosophy is elevated in devotional service and becomes fully Krishna conscious or liberated even within this material world. Text 2. Ivahuti Ruvacha Atapya Jonta Salile Shayanam Putendriyartatma Mayam Vapuste Kuna pravaham sarashesha bijam adyos vayam yashyatarabja jataha Devahuti uvacha. Devahuti said, Atta api, moreover, Ajaha, Lord Brahma, Antasalile, in the water, Shayanam, lying, Bhuta, the material elements, Indriya, the senses, Artha, the sense objects, Atma, the mind, Mayam, pervaded by, Vapuhu, body, Te, your, Gunapravaham, the source of the stream of the three modes of material nature. Sat, manifest, Ashesha, of all. Bijam, the seed. Dadyo, meditated upon. Svayam, himself. Yet, of whom? Jatara, from the abdomen, Abja, from the lotus flower, Jataha, born. Translation, Devahuti said, Brahma is said to be unborn because he takes birth from the lotus flower, which grows from your abdomen while you lie in the ocean at the bottom of the universe. But even Brahma simply meditated upon you, whose body is the source of unlimited universes. Purport. Brahma is also named Aja, he who is unborn. Whenever we think of someone's birth, there must be a material father and mother, for thus one is born. But Brahma, being the first living creature within this universe, was born directly from the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Garbho Dakshayi Vishnu, the Vishnu form lying down in the ocean at the bottom of the universe. Devahuti wanted to impress upon the Lord that when Brahma wants to see him, he has to meditate upon him. Quote, you are the seed of all creation, she said. Although Brahma was directly born from you, he still has to perform many years of meditation, and even then he cannot see you directly, face to face. Your body is lying within the vast water at the bottom of the universe, and thus you are known as Garbho Dakshayi Vishnu. End quote. The nature of the Lord's gigantic body is also explained in this verse. That body is transcendental, untouched by matter. Since the material manifestation has come from his body therefore existed before the material creation. The conclusion is that the transcendental body of Vishnu is not made of material elements. The body of Vishnu is the source of all other living entities, as well as the material nature, which is also supposed to be the energy of that Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devahuti said, quote, you are the background of the material manifestation and all created energy, therefore you're delivering me from the clutches of Maya by explaining the system of Samkhya philosophy is not so astonishing. But your being born from my abdomen is certainly wonderful, because although you are the source of all creation, you have so kindly taken birth as my child. That is most wonderful. Your body is the source of all the universe, and still you put your body within the abdomen of a common woman like me. To me, that is most astonishing. End quote. So that's evidently paraphrasing by Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas of what Devahuti is saying to her beloved son. He's an incarnation of the Lord, so it's not improper for him to be addressed as Garbho Dakshayi Vishnu. It might be considered out of rasa, but after all, she's the mother, and she's astounded. The word adbhuta is used here. That's astonishing. That it's astonishing that although you are the same Lord who is the source of the universe, who is the source of all the living entities, the source of Brahma, Brahma who took birth from your abdomen, from the lotus coming from your abdomen, now you have put yourself in the womb of a common woman like me. This is astonishing. So she's making that connection. And whatever we see in Srimad Bhagavatam is to be taken authoritative. It's the topmost of all authorities, scriptures. There are many Puranas and there are many Upanishads, so many different branches of Vedic literature. But out of all of them, Amalam Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, is considered the top authority. And even if there might appear to be some contradictions between different scriptures, the Bhagavatam's version is to be taken as the most authoritative. So it says that she's speaking, she knows everything about the Lord already. But it appears that by hearing the Samkhya philosophy as given by Lord Kapiladeva, that is knowledge which is imbued with bhakti, with devotional service. There may be jnana. One may study Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhakto. One may study the Vedas for many lifetimes. But unless there is bhakti, then they will not get liberation. They will not get out of this material world. At least they won't attain the perfect stage of going back to home, back to Godhead. So Samkhya, then, as presented by Lord Kapila, includes the proper understanding of Bhakti Yoga. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses the term Samkhya quite a bit as meaning the philosophical understanding. Samkhya also means to count. So generally this material world can be broken down into 24 material elements, 5 senses, working senses, knowledge acquiring senses, 5 material elements, earth, water, fire, air. Then sense objects, sound, touch, taste, and then mind, intelligence, false ego, the time element, 24 material elements. But still, those things are all, we can't exactly say that time is material, because in one sense Krishna is time, but acting in that capacity. But beyond the 24 material elements, Lord Kapiladeva explains that there are 2 more elements, namely the jiva, the living entity, and the paramatma, or the supreme personality of Godhead. And those 2 elements, the non-material elements, are very important because it is the principle of the Samkhya system to help the living entity get free from the entanglement of the 24 material elements. And that can be done by engaging in devotional service. So Samkhya philosophy means devotional service. There's another Samkhya philosophy presented by an imposter, another Kapila, the atheist Kapila, which only deals with the 24 material elements and doesn't deal with the soul and the supreme soul. Therefore, it's very much liked by the modern scientists. They appreciate that because their philosophy is pretty much the same. They have their elements, a chart, 100 elements or so many, and they break down the material energy into those. And they say that there's nothing beyond this. It's a principle of materialistic science that they cannot accept anything supernatural, nothing that cannot be perceived by the senses. So of course that eliminates the soul and the supreme soul, because they're not perceivable by the material elements, by the material senses. Atak Sri Krishna Nama Di Na Bhavet Krayam Indriyai Sevan Mukhi Jiva Do Svayam Eva Spuratyata. Therefore they cannot understand the absolute truth through the material senses or by mixing the material elements. They're always mixing, trying to see if they can come up with something something wonderful. They come up with they split the atoms and they come up with explosions, but they can't actually come up with anything that will make life or make their lives last forever. They try to solve the problem of death by material means, by different types of medicines, and but still it doesn't work. But the real process to get free from death is given by Lord Kapiladev, because when one practices bhakti yoga, devotional service, then he gets free from having to take birth again in this material world. So why do we need to study the material elements? How is that going to help us? Because we need to know how, first of all, we're different than the material elements. Sai Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhumira Ponalo Vayu Kamano Bodhirevacha Ahankara Iti Ame Bina Prakritir Ashtada. These eight material elements comprise the Lord's separated external material energy. And then, Jiva Bhuta Aparayam Itastanyam Prakritim Vidime Param Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho Yayedam Tarya Tejagat. Besides these eight material elements, there is another element which is superior. There is Paraprakriti, the energy, which is Apara is the inferior material energy, and then Paraprakriti, the superior energy, that is the living entity. The living entities can never be created and they can never be destroyed. This superior energy is eternal. The material energy, it also cannot be created and destroyed, at least not by the living entity's efforts. But it's manifest, vyakta and avyakta, unmanifest, according to the will of the Supreme Lord. When he desires, then the material energy mahatattva is generated, and when he desires he brings it back in, but it's constantly being changing. But the living entity achala is never changed, it's eternal. Therefore they will not be able to create life from matter, because it's a different type of energy. You can't mix material energy and make it become spiritual energy. And similarly, the soul can never be destroyed. Ajo nityam shashvatoyam parana nahanyate hanyamane sharire. In just a few verses of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna solves the whole scientific dilemma. What is the source of life? What's the origin? Here, Devahuti is describing the origin. They're trying. The scientists are trying to understand the origin. But how can they understand the origin? They don't even know when the... They don't know when and if there was an origin. They're assuming that there must have been something that was the source. Some of them assume that there was a source, an origin, and some of them assume that the manifestation is eternal or has always existed. But how can they know? They've only been living for 50 years, and or you could say as long as human history has been extant, they could try to judge on that basis. So say 5,000 years, there's been historical records, and there's no indication of a creation during that 5,000 years. So they would have to speculate anything that happened before 5,000 years. It might have been like this or something. Well, it's a very difficult task, but still they don't mind sticking their necks out, so to speak, and making bold statements that the universe began so many billions of years ago. Where's the evidence for that? Is there any proof? No. It's very easy to make such statements when there's no evidence required. They simply make the statement on the basis of their so-called learning, and no one challenges them, but Srila Prabhupada challenged them. Prabhupada challenged them on practically all of their bold statements, that life comes from matter, or that the origin comes from a big bang, or it comes from the void. He challenged them on all these points. Therefore, he's the greatest of the scientists. Because, as he would say, I am not a scientist, but because I'm hearing from the greatest scientists, from Lord Krishna, from Brahma, from Kapila, therefore we can challenge all these people that are simply bluffing. We should not be very easily swayed by their philosophies. Just like, for example, they say that our universe, or the sky that we see, comprises hundreds of millions of light years in distance. Now if we ask them, now how did you measure that? What kind of measurement system did you have? And it turns out, if you go into it, you find out it's a very specious type of measuring system they have. It's very speculative, based on some degrees of light and turning colors, and no evidence, and it's changing always. This year it's 100 million light years, next year 120 million light. They have to keep up with Star Wars, so they have to keep increasing it, making it more amazing. Otherwise, how will they keep getting taxes for all their exploratory space journeys and things? Therefore, we don't hold any value in their statements about the origin of the universe. For example, I went to the Hayden Planetarium. It's the largest planetarium in the world, in New York. And they they had a big explosion sound, and it was shaking. We were all sitting there, and then supposedly the universe came out, and they said that everything came with the Big Bang, and it popped out of the void. Well, what does void mean? Void means there's nothing in there to pop out. By definition, it means there's nothing there. So it's a contradiction. Everything came out of the void. So that means the void must have had something in it if something came out of it. But these metaphysical propositions that they're making, and those supersede science. It doesn't make any sense according to science, but still they state this. Because how else can you explain it? And because they're atheists in principle they're atheists, so rather than give the credit that everything came from God, which is also inconceivable, they prefer to say inconceivably everything came from void. Both are using the same logic. We also say everything inconceivably comes from him. He's a small, medium-sized person. How could the whole universe or millions of universes fit inside him? It's inconceivable. And how could they say that it's inconceivable that everything could come out of a void or a singularity, a very small point? So, no evidence, no proof of any of these things. They may challenge us. That's why Prabhupada wanted to construct this temple of Vedic planetarium, to challenge all the scientific theories. Let them come. Let them come. Bring your theories, your 100 million light year theories. I've given some presentations on Vedic cosmology in different universities around America and other places. So sometimes the scientists, they challenge us. How can we believe this? What evidence have you got? And I respond, what evidence have you got? First of all, let's take your own theories. We have our evidence and we can present that. But first of all, let's examine your evidence. Where is the evidence of a universe coming out of a void? Where is the evidence of a void? Or universe popping out of a void? And where is the evidence of a big explosion creating order so precise that all the universe is traveling around just like a big Rolex watch that you can set your watches by? Where is the evidence of that? So then he was quiet after that. But then we have our evidence because we're receiving knowledge from persons who still live. Brahma's not dead. Krishna's not dead. Do you think Krishna's dead? Or Brahma's dead? They're still living. So we're receiving knowledge from the persons who were there when the universe began. And according to Bhagavatam, even Vishnu or Krishna existed before the material elements, before the universe began. So this is the best evidence we're hearing from the Creator himself and from the first created being, who was secondary creator. They're giving us information. Now they may say, we don't believe that there is such a person that has been created. We haven't seen him. We haven't seen him, but how much can you see? You're only living for the last 50 years. And by your admission, the universe began billions of years ago. So how could you have seen him? And besides, your eyes are so faulty. How can you see so many things? So we have our evidence. And the Vedic planetarium is meant to be presented exactly according to the Vedas. When we were visiting South India and speaking with different experts, pundits in this field of Vedic cosmology, their first questions were, what is your plan? How do you plan to present this planetarium? planetarium. They were excited, but they asked that. And we answered. We plan to present it exactly according to the Vedic version. They said, okay, then we'll help you. Otherwise, we don't want any part of it if you're going to make a compromise with Western science. So, that is a confirmation of what Srila Prabhupada wanted, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his translation of Surya Siddhanta, Siddhanta Shiromani, and his notes, he pointed out in his introduction that, yes, I realize that this Jyoti Shastra, this astronomy, Vedic astronomy, is difficult. But please don't make it seem that it's more difficult than it is. Those who are bright young people, don't discourage them from studying this. It is possible to understand it. So I took that, it was a great, important statement for me, because having looked at the Surya Siddhanta, I came to the conclusion that it was impossible to understand. But it wasn't impossible, but for some people it would be. But fortunately, we enlisted a group of devotee scientists who were very expert in mathematics, and they got involved and they were able to understand these verses very nicely. And they have proven that the Jyoti Shastras and the Puranas are not incompatible, nor are they contradictory, which has been taught for a long time, mistakenly. But actually, they're completely compatible, and we see that the Bhagavatam has the seeds of all Vedic cosmology and astronomy in very, like, code forms. And then the Jyoti Shastras expands on it with all kinds of details and calculations and mathematics and things like that. So, it is not something that we have to be afraid of or intimidated by the material scientists. They're bluffing from the very get-go, as they say, and they have no evidence whatsoever. And we have so much evidence, we can use our scriptures, which are, well, historically speaking, at least 5,000 years old, actually much older than that, hundreds and millions of years old. Surya Siddhanta, spoken by Surya himself millions of years ago. So we have this information that when using these scriptures, you can make all the same calculations as modern science. Well, how is that possible? If this knowledge is not correct, but yet it's been existing for thousands and millions of years, and it explains the phenomenon that we see, such as eclipses and day and night and the seasons and the phases of the moon, then how is it possible if this is so old? So we have this great opportunity to convince the open-minded, thoughtful persons that Vedic knowledge is superior to all modern theories of science. And if we present it as it is, according to the Vedas, and we have to be, shall we say, fearless and not afraid of their challenges, then it will be a great victory. This people will be coming from all over the world to see the Vedic planetarium. And then we'll have a great opportunity for preaching to the whole world. They'll come to Sridhar Mayapur, and it will expand the Sankirtan movement all over the world. Thank you very much. If there are any questions, okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Could you speak a little bit about the flat earth theory?
Which flat earth theory?
I heard there's a Vedic version of that.
Vedic?
There's a Vedic version of that, something like that. I'm not sure.
Well, first you have to find out what your theory is, and then I'll know what you're asking.
Now, I heard in Shastra somewhere it says the earth is like flat in some way.
Bhumandal is flat.
Yeah.
So that's the flat earth theory. We accept that. But as far as our earth globe, according to the Mahabharata and other Srimad Bhagavatam and other Shastras, it's a globe. It's round. Our little earth is just a little speck on the Bhumandala, which is the greater earth. This Mataji over here.
Maharaj, it says in the Bhagavatam that the moon is much further away than the sun. So then the planet that the scientists see as the moon, then what is this?
When what?
In the Bhagavatam it says...
I heard the first part.
Okay.
The second part, when?
So the scientists, they see a planet and they tell us this is the moon and they went to the moon. So where did they go and what is this that they see and they present?
Where did they go and what?
What is it that they see with their instrument that they have that they say this is the moon?
Ah. Well, the moon, I think we agree on what the moon is with the scientists. We don't have any problem there. The distances, there may be some disagreement about the distances. And therefore, Prabhupada generally concluded that because the distances were faulty, they had a faulty idea of the distance, therefore, how could they have gone there in such a short period of time? It was a very long distance. So based on that, he generally discounted their theory that they went there. And that was quite an amazing thing to do in the 50s, in the 60s. He even predicted ahead of time that they couldn't go there. And now there are so many other persons. They've even made different videos saying that the moon landing was a hoax. So you can see them on the internet if you want. All the different things that they say were faulty and prove that it was a hoax. It was done in Arizona, or just like if you go to the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C., they have earth rocks. And it says here, these are rocks from the earth. Did I say earth rocks? I didn't mean earth. I mean moon rocks. They're rocks from the moon. And it says, don't they look similar to those in Arizona? And Prabhupada said, and so they told Prabhupada, yes, they look similar because they are from Arizona.
While we were setting out to build this temple of Vedic planetarium, I understand that the purpose of it is to create some sort of a sensation by presenting an alternative to the current scientific model of the universe. But just like Prabhupada translated Bhagavad Gita as it is on the basis of his realization of it, it would be difficult, like you said, to present the Vedic version as it is if we don't have a clear understanding and realization of it. So isn't there some element of risk to build a planetarium that we ourselves don't fully understand? And in fact, amongst ourselves, I understand there is more than one model that has been presented by various scientists, devotees, or in terms of conceptualization. So, in other words, the result of it, if we don't fully understand what we are doing, could be to make big fools of ourselves in the eyes of the, of the majority. So could you please address this?
Therefore, it behooves us to understand. to get a correct understanding, so that there's no more doubts. And therefore, we do have to dive into it with full enthusiasm and make sure we do understand it. That's not impossible. Prabhupada wouldn't have given us an impossible task. He gave us this task to do it. We've been meditating on it and working on it for, 33 years. But perhaps the time has come now for us to, by the grace of the spiritual master, what is it? Mukam karoti vachanam bhangam langayate girim yat kripatam aham mande shri gurum dinataranam. By the mercy of the guru, even a lame man can climb mountains, a dumb man can speak eloquent words, poetry. So even something as difficult as understanding the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam can be done by the mercy of the spiritual master. So that's our basis, isn't it? Faith in Guru.
You started the answer by saying that we have to fully understand, but then it seems you're saying that we don't need to fully understand. We just repeat and...
No, we will in other words, we have to go in with faith that my Guru Maharaj has given me this instruction. It's like the illiterate Brahmin in South India. His Guru Maharaj told him to read the Bhagavad Gita every day. Now he's illiterate. So that's a difficult task. But still, he didn't reject the order. And he was trying to read every day the Bhagavad Gita, and everyone was laughing at him, all the learned Brahmins. You know the story. But he was crying tears of ecstasy, and Lord Chaitanya embraced him and said, "You are the real knower of Bhagavad Gita." So we have to take the order of the spiritual master as our very life and soul. He wanted it. We have to try for it sincerely and by His mercy, by the mercy of Krishna. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tatagaro tasyaite katita hyarta prakashante mahatmana. All the imports of the Vedic knowledge will be revealed to one who has implicit faith in both Guru and Krishna. I thank you very much for your question. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.